Hello, my name is Pete Redden. Welcome to The Way I Taught It, next level aviation knowledge in microbursts. Today we're going to be talking about energy management. Yes, chapter 4, the Airplane Flying Handbook. It's a brand new chapter for this version of the Airplane Flying Handbook. And I've heard a lot of discussion about it. I've heard a lot of negativity about it. And I'm going to go with very often ill-quoted, paraphrased, that Einstein supposedly said. And basically, he said, you simply can't explain it. You simply don't understand it. In the military, we call that the bluff. B-L-U-F. Bravo, Lima. Uniform Foxtrot. Bottom line, up front. When you're receiving training, when you're giving training, you should be giving the bottom line up front. And that's what I'm going to try to attempt when it comes to the nebulous topic of energy management. What's the bottom line up front for us as pilots who are practically applying energy management to our flying? The introduction to Chapter 4 basically says, verbatim, this chapter is all about managing the airplane's altitude and airspeed using an energy-centered approach. Energy management can be defined as the process of planning, monitoring, and controlling altitude and airspeed targets in relationship to the airplane's energy state in order to, one, attain and maintain desired vertical flight path airspeed profiles, detect, correct, and prevent unintentional altitude airspeed deviations from the desired energy state, prevent irreversible deceleration and or sink rate that results in a crash. Pretty much after that, Chapter 4 gets very nebulous, it gets very scientific, it gets very theoretical, and it's very hard for a general aviation pilot in general, doesn't have a doctorate in physics or aerospace aeronautics, to understand what is being said there. So what we're going to try and do is break that down as much as possible. So what's the importance of energy management? I thought of five scenarios where energy management is crucial to having a successful outcome. Glide distance, final approach, which includes stabilized approach, and we'll talk about that as well. The power off 180 and making the impossible turn possible. If we don't understand energy management, we do not understand glide distance. We will not understand how to fly final approach. We will not understand what a stable approach is. We'll never be able to do a power off 180, and we'll never make the impossible turn possible. So the definition of total energy, which everybody knows from their high school physics class, is potential energy plus kinetic energy equals total energy. And to go back to the opening, to be a pilot, you don't even have to have your driver's license. You don't even have to have a degree from a college. You don't even have to have a high school diploma to be a pilot. Yet Chapter 4 has been written to the doctoral level of understanding and correlation as opposed to the high school level. Not that we're ignorant, not that we're dumb or stupid, but you can be a pilot without a high school degree. So we must write and communicate at that level so that all pilots can understand. So back to total energy, potential and kinetic. Potential energy is your altitude. Your altimeter measures your potential energy. Your airspeed measures your kinetic energy. Your kinetic energy is also tied to G, because when you bank the airplane and you use the elevator to turn the airplane, you're going to increase your G loading, which is a kinetic source of energy. So we control potential and kinetic energy. We control altitude and airspeed with pitch and power, not one or the other. It's a combination of both. Sometimes we just control it with pitch, and sometimes we just control it with power. So how does all this come together with these five topics? Let's talk about glide distance. To understand energy management within glide distance, you have to understand, and it's required by the ACS, understand your glide ratio. Now, ratios are normally the same units. So we say feet to feet or knots to knots. It's a ratio. In aviation, though, we kind of mess that up a little bit, because remember, some of us are not even high school graduates yet and we're pilots, and we look at a ratio that compares altitude above ground level to nautical miles traveled. So that's not really a ratio, it's more of a comparison, but we'll call it a ratio for discussion's sake. So the ratio of the number of feet above ground level versus the number of nautical miles you can go. Most airplanes are somewhere between a 1.5 and a 1.9 nautical miles per 1,000 feet. So your potential energy altitude is going to be transformed into the potential energy of distance through a calculation on a no-wind day. And then as you execute that glide, you are now turning potential energy into kinetic energy of airspeed to cover that distance. And that airspeed has to be at your best glide speed. So let's talk about that a little bit. If you have an airplane that has a 1.5 mile glide distance for every 1,000 feet above the ground, if you are 1,000 feet above the ground in the traffic pattern and you lose your engine, you can glide over the ground 1.5 miles, period. No wind. You can't create any more energy. You can certainly dissipate energy, but if you keep your wing clean and you maintain your best glide speed, you can cover, whether you're in curved flight or straight flight, you can cover 1.5 nautical miles across the ground. Now, we can decrease the amount of distance and the amount of potential energy by adding drag with regards to flaps or slipping, pitching the nose down in a glide, in an engine out glide, pitching the nose down and increasing our glide speed, which will increase our rate of burn altitude, which will decrease our distance covered across the ground. We can't stretch our glide because if we start raising the nose to glide at a slower airspeed, we're just going to sink faster because of the lift drag curve, which means we're just going to dissipate potential energy quicker and not go as far kinetically. So we have to understand that glide distance is based on a specific airspeed to cover a specific distance from a specific altitude above the ground. And now we can use that information with a GPS, a VOR, our ability to gauge distance with our eyes, although that's highly fallible, to determine whether a field is within glide distance or not from our starting point of our engine failure to our ending point of ground impact or landing in a field or on a runway. This is why the traffic pattern at the normal rectangular traffic pattern, standard pattern, is supposed to be a mile, half a mile to a mile wide, never further than a mile from the airfield at any point. Because if you lose your engine, the FAA has determined that if you're starting that pattern at 1,000 feet and you fly it within a half mile to a mile, if you lose your engine in traffic pattern, you should always be able to make the runway. If you're flying an airplane or being instructed to do otherwise, you may want to scratch your head a little bit and put a question mark on that and go, why would I want to fly outside glide distance of a perfectly good runway when I can adjust my configuration and my airspeeds to fly closer to the runway in case my engine fails and I can make the runway as opposed to a road or a field? Yeah, that's more beneficial to you and the insurance companies, but I would rather put my airplane on a runway than somewhere other than a runway in an engine failure scenario in the traffic pattern. So there's glide distance. It's about as easy as we can make the discussion. We're going to use airspeed to bleed off altitude to go as far as possible. Let's talk about final approach and we'll get into stabilized approach. So let's just talk about final approach, period. Chapter 4 hints at this a little bit, but they get consternated with a lot of big words and a lot of big explanations about physics and energy and all stuff. Let's just break final approach down to the basic components. And you can go back to, I think, episode 3 on landings, and I break it down there as well. There are basically 7 scenarios on final approach. You can be high and fast, high and slow, on speed, on glide path, fast on glide path, slow on glide path, low and fast, and low and slow. If we take an energy management look at this and we forget about pitch for airspeed and power for altitude, because that's actually not a complete answer, and it's really why so many people have trouble learning how to land. That's an incomplete answer to the 6-7 scenarios you find yourself on final approach. We're going to remove the on glide path, on airspeed portion of that, because anybody who's flying on airspeed and on glide path, we don't want to talk about that because they're doing it right. If you are high and fast. You have high potential energy and you have high kinetic energy in relationship to your glide path. Your altitude is high and your airspeed is high. If we want to correct that, that is going to be a power change. Because when we pull the power towards idle, we're immediately going to create drag with the prop. That drag is going to immediately start decelerating us. And we are also going to immediately cease thrust and airflow over the elevator, which will make that less effective. And all of that will give us a nose down pitch moment. So we will be pitching towards the glide path. And we will be slowing some. We won't be slowing all the way to final approach airspeed. But with one movement, we are changing our total energy state and we're killing two birds with one stone. And then once we get on our glide path, we will then pitch to establish proper airspeed on the proper glide path and then trim and set power for that glide path airspeed combination. So we changed our total energy by adjusting the kinetic energy and dissipating potential energy. Now, if we're high and slow, it would be just the opposite because now we're taking both pieces of energy into account. We're high on potential energy, we're low on kinetic energy. Our airspeed's low, kinetic is low. Our altitude is high, we're high on potential energy. So in that case, we would pitch the nose down. Because as soon as we pitch the nose down, we're going to increase our airspeed, our kinetic energy, and we're going to decrease our potential energy. Works the same thing from underneath the glide path. I'm low and fast. I have high kinetic, low potential. So I'm going to raise the nose and trade the kinetic for potential energy, and I'm going to increase my altitude towards my glide path. And then once I hit my airspeed, I'll add power to hold my airspeed till I'm on glide path, and then I'll readjust for proper glide path maintenance. If I'm low and slow, usually that should be a go around, but a go around is you add power, you create airspeed, you create lift, you create more tail down force. The nose will naturally pitch up towards the glide path, and you will climb to glide path and then adjust for normal glide path maintenance. You have to understand, are you low and slow or low and fast? We've been teaching for a very long time that if you're low, add power. If you're fast, adjust pitch. And that, again, it's not a total answer to the solution because the solution is a total energy problem, potential and kinetic, altitude and airspeed in relationship to the glide path. So let's take that to stabilized approach. Seen a lot of interesting discussion on stabilized approach, and I really haven't commented on it, but I feel like I have to start commenting on it. Stabilized approaches are absolutely 100% important. If you look through FAA literature, it really doesn't give you a distance from the airfield that you have to be stable. It gives you altitude suggestions, 1,000 feet for turbojet, 500 feet for all other types of aircraft. And we get into the discussion of, well, we have to be stable at 500 feet for single engine general aviation aircraft. Well, if we apply some knowledge about glide distance to that, it really doesn't make sense because at 500 feet in a 3-degree glide path, you're going to be 1.6 miles from the runway, and you're only going to be able to glide approximately 3/4 of a mile if you lose your engine. So that doesn't make sense. If we read the airplane flying handbook about landings and traffic patterns, it's going to tell us the standard traffic pattern is 0.5 to 1.0 from the airfield. Again, because if we lose our motor, we can glide to the runway. So if we want to be 1 mile from the runway on a 3-degree glide path, we're now at 300 feet AGL. It's the way the math works. You'll have to trust me. I think it's technically 303, but we'll be 300 feet AGL approximately. And if we lose our motor there, we still can't glide to the runway. So this 3-degree glide path that was really developed for jet aircraft is not really a good thing for us to follow far from the airfield because it puts us below gliding distance to the runway. So when we look at the airplane flight handbook and we look at traffic patterns and we look at how to land an airplane, in their diagrams, it alludes to, doesn't state specifically, that 1,600 feet from the runway is what's considered short final. It could be shorter than that, but short final starts about 1,600 feet from the runway, which is about 100 feet above the ground. It's actually 105 feet above the ground on a 3-degree glide path. That equates to about 0.25 nautical miles from the runway. So if we want to have a stabilized approach in a general aviation aircraft, we probably want our approach stabilized no later than 105 feet above the ground, about quarter mile from the runway, which you're talking somewhere between 10 and 15 seconds prior to touchdown, most likely at the speeds that we fly. If we can come in a little steeper than that, which I believe we should in a general aviation aircraft to maintain that glide option to the runway, we might want to be 100 feet or 200 feet above that. So about 300 feet higher, or 300 feet total AGL. And that will put us in a scenario where if our engine fails, we can glide, so we can still glide to the runway. So we're going to be coming in above the 3-degree glide path, 4, 5, 6-degree glide path. And you'll have to determine that on your own and how you want to deal with that. Being stabilized at 500 feet in a single engine general aviation airplane outside of an instrument approach, i.e., if you're VFR, you're using airline multi-engine jet techniques and procedures to fly a single engine airplane. And we have to be very careful when we do that. So the jet can lose an engine and still maintain that 3-degree glide path to the runway. And that's, I won't go into it, but that's why it's a 3-degree glide path, as opposed to when we lose our single piston engine, we are now a glider. So we have to take these things into account. This is aeronautical decision-making. This is risk management. This is following all the guidance that the FAA has in the airplane flight handbook. The power off 180. If you understand energy management, if you understand potential and kinetic energy and how to dissipate potential energy and or turn it into kinetic energy through airspeed increase or drag, you'll understand the power off 180 much more precisely. The power off 180 is accomplished at best glide speed. So our airspeed is going to be stable the whole time throughout the entire maneuver. So we have slip and we have flaps to dissipate potential energy altitude. As we put flaps in and we increase drag, we have to pitch to create or to maintain our kinetic energy of airspeed, which we all know. If you're 1,000 feet above the ground, you need to know how far your airplane glides over the ground on a no wind day. So if you're flying an airplane that glides 1.5 miles on a no wind day and you pull your engine to idle a beam to touchdown point, on a no wind day, you should be 0.5 nautical miles from the runway on downwind. You should be able to fly 0.5 nautical miles straight ahead on downwind, turn base, fly the 0.5 nautical miles that you have offsetted yourself from the runway on downwind, and then turn final. And on final, it will be 0.5 nautical miles to your touchdown point. It really is that easy. Now, you do have to account for winds and make adjustments, and you'll learn that through experience. But to about a 10 knot headwind, if you think of your power off 180 in that simple of terms, and that's where you start from, you'll have a standardized starting point and a no-wind situation, and now you can learn, okay, my airplane glides this far. When you touch down in that scenario, 0.5, 0.5, 0.5, your flaps are going to be up, because if you put your flaps down, you won't be able to glide as far. So now the closer you get inside of that half mile of the runway, you're going to have to use flaps and slip to adjust your glide, adjust your potential energy of altitude to maintain your kinetic energy state to the runway. Let's talk about bank angle, elevator, and G-forces. We all know that accelerated stalls are out there. We have too much bank angle, we have too much pull on the elevator, and not enough airspeed to maintain the G-loading that we have, so we exceed our critical angle of attack and the airplane stalls. Now, you can have an accelerated stall at 0 degrees of bank. You can have it anywhere in process of doing a loop. You're at zero angle of bank. You are pitching the aircraft to do the loop, which means you could have an accelerated stall because you're increasing the AOA to make that loop occur. So anytime we add G onto the airplane, we are dissipating kinetic energy of airspeed unless we add power, engine power, which is kinetic energy. It's a kinetic energy input to overcome those Gs and maintain that level flight turn, or to maintain that 0 degree bank loop of curved flight. So anytime we add G to the airplane, we're going to dissipate kinetic energy because of AOA increase, because of drag increase. So we have to add the kinetic energy of fuel through the engine to maintain our total energy. We're also changing lift vectors. So when we change lift vectors, we also have to change power settings to maintain total lift. So I hope that brings energy management into a more understandable piece of this. What's the bottom line, right? Bottom line up front, bottom line at the end. If you understand glide distance and how your airplane glides, that's the first step to understanding energy management for your aircraft. If you understand that altitude is potential energy, and airspeed and G are kinetic energy, one is a positive kinetic energy, one is a negative kinetic energy in most scenarios, and you understand how pitch and power together, not separately, together affect energy in this discussion, you'll be able to build from that building blocks onto the final approach, the stabilized approach, power off 180. Oh, and I almost forgot. Making the impossible turn possible. Bottom line is, in your airplane, if you know the glide distance, you know what altitude you have to be above the ground to be able to turn back to the runway. To be able to turn back to the runway, you have to be able to make a turning glide, which means you have to add that distance across the ground to your distance from the airport when your engine fails. And that is the minimum altitude if you are the most proficient pilot in your airplane and can fly everything perfectly to make the impossible turn possible. There's also discussion, higher bank angle is better because you have a higher turn rate, which means you'll turn quicker and lose more altitude. You can go up and go to 8,000 feet and do steep spirals, and you can prove that bank angle, the higher the bank angle, the less altitude you use in a turn. When you're low to the ground, your engine has failed, you're in a heightened, close to panic state while you're trying to control all your emotions and all your inputs to the airplane, higher bank angles are going to be more treacherous for most people. So you also have to take into account, well, I'm only going to use a 30-degree bank turn, or I'm only going to use a 15-degree bank turn to turn back. Well, a 15-degree bank turn is going to take more altitude to cover that bigger turn radius, more distance, more glide distance before your nose is pointing back to the airport. So you have to take all these things into account. This is total energy management. This is building the potential energy of altitude for the impossible turn to become possible, because that potential energy of altitude has to be enough to give you the kinetic energy to make it all the way back to the runway. And you have to think through and do the math. You can't just go out and guess. You have to sit down with your flight instructor and do the math and come up with a number. And then you have to put a pad on top of that number. And then you have to go to altitude and practice that number plus the pad to become proficient at being able to make the impossible turn possible. My name is Pete Redd. This is The Way I Taught It. This was Energy Management. Thanks for listening.